Okay? Yeah. I'm Tom Carley, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 12/15/1967. And I want to say hello to all of my old friends who are in this room and just be so happy to see the new friends, because this is the greatest place in the world. There is no place that will do for you what this has done for me. My sponsor is here tonight. He has made sure that he has stayed in touch with me and I with him for a long time. I'm very blessed to have that. Look for that, because it's important to you to have somebody to touch. Now, I was a classic drunk that was much the same as most of you were. I drank till I got drunk, because my belief is that alcohol is made to get drunk. You know, those people that say you want to stop and have a drink, I never went with them. If someone said they wanted to go and get hammered, I said, you got me, because that was perfect. From an early age, I found the guys that drank like I did, much like all of us. You know, if they didn't want to really get in trouble, try to get out of trouble, whatever, I didn't want to drink with them, because it was boring as hell. And you know, when you come home, you know, think about this. When you come home at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, you ain't drunk, you are in trouble. A lot of trouble. Because, you know, then you got to start lying. And you know you get caught most of the time. But I only lie to my wife. And that, of course, is appropriate. That's as it should be. But anyhow, my high school years were drinking pretty much every weekend. You know, the guys that I met, you know, we would go to Kelly's a lot. Kelly, I knew my car would get us to Kelly's without driving it, because it knew where it was going on Friday and Saturday night. And I used to just think that I was a hotshot, man. I was really something special. And I would always have the propensity to pick on guys like Bruce, because they could put me down quicker. I didn't want to get into those long, drawn-out fights. I wanted them over quickly so that I could continue drinking again. And that was as it should be. You know, you have to do that. I mean, you have to do that. You know, I was telling one of the young ladies when we came in this morning, or this afternoon, I said, you know, why is it that those people out there didn't see what I saw in the mirror? I mean, I was perfect. I'd look in that mirror and say, oh, man, I'm hot tonight. I'm hot tonight. And I'd go out there and I'd put my lines out, and they would say, already heard them. But anyhow, I thought this was having fun. I really did. I thought that the drinking, you know, I on Monday morning, like, you go back to school when you were like a junior or a senior, and a couple of the kids would say, you know, that they went to a Boy Scout camp or an altar boy meeting or something. And I thought they were really jerks, because I got drunk. What's the matter with you? I got drunk this weekend. You know, there's a lot of good stuff that I did that I missed. Believe me, it was depressing later on when you thought about it, because it was much better when you got sober, as we all know. But anyhow, I truly believe that alcohol was made to get drunk, and that you're supposed to just drink it until you fall down or somebody knocked you down. And that was fine with me. That was fine with me. And I didn't drink every day. The problem was, is when I did drink, I got drunk. Because I couldn't stop. But I never thought about it. Who the hell knew what an alcoholic was back in, you know, all the alcoholics were with my pal Andy Daniels down at the park, you know, bumming coins. That's where all the drunks were. They weren't, you know, I had a job. I had a mother and father who didn't drink. I had two brothers that were fine, and I had every advantage in the world. I was an only child, and I never knew that we didn't have money because I was treated to the very best by my mother, whom was very right. She was perfectly correct. She knew that I was perfect. Now, she did not live long enough to tell my wife. I don't know why, but she should have, though I've been trying to convince that girl about that for a long time. As a matter of fact, who was it that told me that my name was in the paper for being married? I've been married for 114 years. Now, my wife came and got me at Sacred Heart School Playground at recess. And she captured me and took me with her. And that's it. I've been with her ever since. Now, if you ask me how long I've been married, I will tell you this categorically, I don't know. But it's a long, long time. And I hope it's longer, to tell you the truth. But anyhow, after my high school years, I had a job downtown in a clothing store. And the guys that I worked with were really terrific. Man, they partied fantastic. And they took this punk with them wherever they went. And I loved to be with the big guys because they had the moves. And I had to copy those moves. Are you kidding? You know, I went to places that none of you remember, maybe a few of the press club and the places like that, that no longer are in existence. And the Owls Club. You know, the Owls Club, they did everything in the Owls Club but have a boat race. Let me tell you, it was fantastic. And it didn't open up till about 2 a.m. That was perfect. That was perfect. Because, you know, you were out past like 1 or so, you'd say, well, what the hell's the point of going home now? Because she's already pissed off. You know, how mad can they get? You know, I brought her one day, and a nice guy that I am, I brought her home a bag of Greek hot dogs. That's when they were 6 for $1. And I thought that was terrific. It was 4 a.m, and I brought them home, and she put them on the wall. Now, that was inconsiderate as hell. Don't you think? I mean, I was a nice guy. I couldn't understand it. And she suggested that I clean it up, but I went to sleep. Anyhow, right after high school, as I said, I was with those guys, And oh man, they introduced me to all kinds of stuff. They introduced me to martinis, and you know, I mean, when a punk walks up to the bar and says to the guy, "Give me a martini," he knows you're a hotshot. I mean, you've got to be a big guy to do that. And they were just marvelous to me. I referred to them as a glass of loudmouth, because after about 3. You buried everybody in the joint. But anyhow, that's what I did. And it was just magnificent. It was really, really fun. I can remember one time, my wife and I, who was my girlfriend at the time, we went to a dance at the Mirror. Well, in my day, the dances at the Mirror were terrific. They really were. And, like, if the cops would have ever stayed outside the gate, they could have arrested about everybody that was in there. But they never did that. They let you go. You know, when I used to get drunk, if a cop picked me up, he'd take me home. And the other cop would drive my car. And I'd ask him, don't turn the lights on, will you? I don't want anybody to know I'm a drunk. I got my car parked in the next door neighbor's front lawn, and I don't want to have anybody know I was a drunk. Imagine what those guys said to my kids going to school when my car would be parked in the middle of his lawn. I only missed the driveway by about 90 feet. This was all fun. You know, my wife, we started to have babies, and then we had babies, and we had babies, and we had babies, till she found out what caused it, then we had stopped having babies. Once she found that out, it was over. But anyhow, I was having a good time. My life didn't change. And you know what else? Neither did hers. She was still taking care of 6 or so kids and doing all the rest of the stuff. And somehow, for the first maybe 30 years we were married, I had the checkbook. Can you imagine that? She'd say, I need some money. I'd say, oh, certainly, dear. The statement went to work. It was lovely. I had a great time. Long as I could get drunk, as long as I could party, I was having a great time. I didn't care about anybody else. I cared only about me. And I was having fun. Now, after that, I went in the Navy. And I got to tell you something. That's really a good place for a drunk. It really is. I'd recommend it to any drunk that he joins the Navy. Because I got to tell you, it's a party. Sailors love to do 2 things. They love to get drunk and fight. Not necessarily in that order. But it was a great time. Because, man, you know, it was really, I was living with my mother until then. I had nobody to answer to. Although my mother would never pick on me because she knew, as I told you previously, I was perfect. And she never told my father that. Who? He caught me a couple times and it wasn't nice. But it didn't bother me. I didn't get drunk until the next day that time. But that's what it was. Now, in the Navy, I got drunk all the time. I can remember being on Broad Street in Philadelphia. Now, you know, I didn't always look like this. I mean, I used to, you know, when I was a sailor, I had like that 29-inch waist and those 13 buttons. You remember how you used to show those off? Yeah, kid, you know what to do with them. Anyhow, I can remember being on Broad Street and a half pint fit right in the pants because it was still so tight. You know, the girls like to wear tight pants, so do guys. When they don't look like this. Anyhow, I'd have a half pint in there, you know, in my sailor hat down to here. And I can remember sitting on a stoop on Broad Street one night, and 2 elderly women walked by, and there was a soldier and a Marine coming up this way. And I had just got up at that time. And I heard the one lady say to the other ones, look at those soldiers there. Look at how drunk they are. Isn't that disgusting? And the other one says, yeah, and look at that sailor. And the other one says, yeah, but isn't he cute? Yeah, hey, those pants are tight, the whole thing. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? The sailors used to fall down and the old ladies would pick you up. It's great. I was having fun. I was having fun. Now, I used to come home on a weekend when I could, and we'd get drunk. My mother would sit by my bed and watch me, because that's the only time she'd see me, unless I asked her for money, which I did every weekend. She told my father one time, she says, George, I don't think they pay him in the Navy. He never got any money. Well, you can't drink and be in the Navy and have money. It's against the law. You know, that became one of my credos, was that you couldn't go home with money. Never allowed to go home with money. Because if you go home with money, your wife thinks that all the time you got money. So you got to stay out and get rid of the money. You got to get rid of the money. But anyhow, after I came back from the Navy, now, I was really intense. Now, think about this. I was defending you from the Russian hordes. I was defending you on a destroyer. We were sailors. I was in a 5-inch gun mount at a practice shooting that thing. And they came into the gun mount and they handed me a telegram. My first son had been born. And I was defending all of you. It was magnificent. Now, I didn't get home for 3 months. When I went to Key West, and I was a scullery maid in Key West for about 2 months. And then they let me go. And I remember talking to my wife, who was living with her parents, with our firstborn child, whom I had not seen yet. And his name was Tommy. Now, she would say, when are you getting out? And I said, oh, geez, I don't know. They never tell you that. Well, do you think you'll have enough money? I says, oh, they never tell you that either. They never tell you any of that stuff. And when they let me out, I'll call you. And now, everybody that's been in the service knows exactly the moment you're getting out and how much money you're going to get. But I'm in Key West, and I call her, and I said, you know what I've decided? So that I could save money, I'm going to hitchhike home. She says, geez, that's a long way. I said, no, it'll be all right. An airplane ticket from Miami at that time was Allegheny Airlines, and it was $75. And a bus ticket was $32. And I'm going to save this money. So they let me out, and it only took me 2 days to get to Coral Gables. And had I not been dressed with socks on, I'd have been broke. Remember, guys, how we all put the money in a sock? You know, every crook in the world knows that. I mean, you know, if you put your money in your sock, if he's a crook, he's going to go in your sock because he knows where you put it. But we were really smooth. Well, anyhow, after 2 days, I called my wife and I said, you know, I'm not having any luck getting a ride, so I better take the bus. So I took the bus, and I came home, and they met me at the bus station, and after a while, our conversation, and I'm meeting my little son and so on, and I gave her $50, and she says, oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. You know, I didn't. I said, well, I'm a hell of a guy. Now, think about it. I didn't see the kid born. I wasn't with him for 3 months. The apple of my eye, certainly. But it took me 2 days to get to Coral Gables because I had to party. I had to party. I didn't celebrate his birth, I will tell you categorically. Maybe I did on the boat with our alcohol and orange juice. I remember one time we were steaming And they shot the torpedo off the side, and it went right down, because all of the alcohol was gone. The skipper was really pissed off. He was probably mad because he didn't get any. But anyhow, came home from the Navy, went back to my job, and nothing changed. Now, I went back to school. So I was going to school at 7, from 7 to 10 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then we worked until 9 o'clock on Mondays and Fridays. Well, now you understand this, that when you get out of school at 10 o'clock, and basically when I got out of work was around 9:30 or so, so the children were sleeping. Now, why in the hell would I go home? I got nobody to talk to there, because there's nobody going to compliment me about what a great guy I am, except in the bars that some of them broads would say, geez, you're a nice guy, right up there buy him a drink. Wonder why that is. Anyhow, I would stay out till 2-3 o'clock. It was one of those nights when I brought her home the hot dogs. It was one of them. But anyhow, nothing changed. Didn't change at all. And my wife would be up days at a time, because sometimes I'd miss a couple of days. And I remember one day I came home after being missing for a few days, and I was dead tired. You get very tired out there. I mean, you think that's easy? It ain't all that easy. They think you're having fun. You think you're having fun. But anyhow, I'm laying in the bed, and I hear, shh, like that. Because she had instructed me profoundly not to go to sleep. Well, what was she going to do? Well, she was standing over me with a tea kettle. Let me tell you, you get up real slow. And you're good at doing the eye thing. I'm awake. I'm okay now. I'm okay now. You pray that she'd go to sleep. But they wouldn't. They'd just sit there with the tea kettle or a butcher knife. I think she was afraid to stab me. But I didn't tell her. I never told her that. But anyhow, I'm having fun. Now, I know, I'm still a punk, but I'm not a punk kid anymore. You know, when you're a punk kid, you can get away with anything, you think. Right, kids? Huh? When you're a punk kid, you think you can get away with anything? You ain't made out of iron. I promise you. But anyhow, I thought I was. I thought I was. Anyhow... I then I got my own store. Now, how big are you? You know, I got a sign out front that says Tom Carley's Varsity Shop on Peach Street. Hey, I'm a hitter, man. I'm a hitter. Are you kidding? And the cash register is mine. Now, if the cash register is mine, the money inside of it is mine, right? Right. So we had the Lawrence Hotel across the street, and that was a good joint. Let me tell you, that was a good joint. That should, for the young people, that should still be there, because we had a guy by the name of Smokey, and Smokey had tit, when you go like that all the time. And you'd say to Smokey, he was behind the plank every night. So this is the first time I thought about Smokey in a long time. And you just walk by and you'd say, and he'd bring you a key. And wonderful man. Wonderful man. Those were the way things should be. Anyhow, all of that good stuff is what we had. So I'm having fun. Can you blame me? I mean, you know, the six kids and the wife, what's the difference? I'm having fun. I thought this was going to last forever. Now, I got my own store. It didn't work out. I'm going to make this a little brief because it's a long story. But it's, you've all heard it. But I got this store, and it didn't work out because, you know, a real lot of the time, I was sitting across the street in the bar at the Lawrence Hotel, and I'd sit at the end, and somebody would say to me, "How's business?" "Terrific. Buy them all a drink." I was big on that. Big shot. I love that. Win the bar. I won the bar one time at the Lager Cafe. I'm sure that some of you people were in there. And the bar is pretty long. And I said to the guy, "Wing the bar." He said, "Everybody?" And I said, "Yeah." "They got a back room." "There's this many people in the back room." I thought I was going to have to give them one of my kids. But I was a big shot. You kidding? I was a big shot. Wore nice clothes, drove a car, had a job. I was a hot shot. Always wanted to be a hot shot from the time I was a little kid. Hung out with the older guys because they knew what was going on. They knew what was happening. And I was all right hanging out with them. And that's the way it was. So now I closed that store and I went out on a road. Now, that's like being a sailor, you know. Now, I'm out on a road in eastern Pennsylvania. Now, I drank in bars. I didn't do no closet drinking. I wanted everybody to know that I was out there and that I was drunk. And if you didn't know, I'd find you. So, I'm doing that same thing in eastern Pennsylvania. And those guys took umbrage at some of the things that I did. I couldn't understand them. You know, I'd wing the bar and I didn't have any money. I'd say, "I'll be back tomorrow or the next day to pay you." Right, throw me out the door and tell me not to come back. Now, that was terrible. That was a great... Hi, baby. I love you. Anyhow... Here I am out there traveling around, and now I decided that I wasn't going to go out anymore. I was going to buy a jug. So I would buy a jug, and I would go into the motel room about 5, 6 o'clock and start drinking. Now, then I would take a nap. Now, I never, ever had a blackout. As long as I drank. But I used to take occasional naps. One time I took one on 13th and Cascade. Do you know what's there? The railroad tracks. Guys knocking on a window saying, "Hey, Tom, do you know where you're at?" I said, "Oh, sure, I just rested my eyes." Well, he said, "I'd get off the railroad tracks if I were you." But they were only naps. Never did I have a blackout. Remembered everything. Nothing ever happened. Anyhow, now I'm calling my wife about 11 o'clock, telling her what a bad life I got out here and how good she's got it. And she says, "Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. You come home, I'll go out there, but you better bring more money than you give me. Because there's people asking me for payments." "Don't worry about a thing, darling. God will take care of us. Kept me alive up to now. Should have been dead, right? You know, every time I see that show, 1,000 Ways to Die, I tell them there's 1,001. And I didn't think of it. But anyhow, I came home, and I conned this guy into selling... me and a partner, another store in town. Big store. So and my partner lived in Toledo. So now I was really big. I was really hot now. Now I had arrived, okay? And my wife said to me, "What are you going to do about your drinking?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, you can't keep this up." She started, you know, she was making references to an alcoholic. And I certainly was not that. I mean, I told you before that Andy Daniels was an alcoholic. I wasn't. I was a nice guy. I had a shirt and a tie on and drove a car. I had a job. How could I be an alcoholic? But she brought it up a few times. So anyhow, I said, "No, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop on my way home at the Manicor, and I'm going to have one drink, and I'm going to get a couple customers, and then I'll come right home." And I had no problem with that. That lasted for at least 3 days. Because, you see, I determined at that point that if I got two drinks, I would get two customers. And if I got three drinks, I'd get three customers. Well, after three martinis, I used to tell those first three customers to go to hell. I didn't like them anyway. Now I'm calling home 8:30, 9 o'clock, crying. And I'm saying, "I just came in here to get a drink, and I'm drunk again." And I'm crying. But I ain't doing nothing about it. In the meantime, this kid that I knew, bad kid, he was a bad kid, got in a lot of trouble with drinking. He joined a group of people called Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I used to spend time talking to him a lot before he went into that program with those people. But after he joined that group, I didn't have, you know, much to do with him, but he'd still come and talk to me. "How are you this and how are you that," and all the rest. And I would walk away and say, I'm just fine. Don't be saving me a seat in that group, because I ain't coming." And he's laughing up his sleeve, you know. If you ain't coming, you're going to die. But he didn't tell me that. He just would slowly do it. Well, I'm going to make this short, but what happened was, it was Christmas time. And I had to deliver a suit for a guy who lived out in Fairview. And I was driving a loaner from my pal Pete Otis, because I had smashed up two cars that week, my wife's and mine. And Pete Otis would never have been broke or gone to jail had I continued drinking. He used to buy front ends for my car three at a time. He knew that I was going to use them. Actually, what happened is my brother invited me to a party at his house, and my brother was a doctor, and he had all these highfalutin guys, these doctors, you know, that were all big shots. And he invited me. He didn't used to invite me to his house often because I drank. So anyhow, he invited me to his house, and it's 5 o'clock, and I didn't have a drink all day. And I said to my wife, "Now look at that. I didn't have a drink all day. What a hell of a guy, right? I think I'll have a stinger. Hello. Hello. That's ice cream, right? Let me have another." Well, within 20 minutes, I cleaned out his house. I got rid of all those doctors. I told them they were a pain in the ass. They should get the road. My brother also took umbrage at what I said. And he didn't speak to me except in very, very harsh tones. So now, that was on a Sunday, and I backed out of his house and I smashed up the rear end of my car. Now, that was the first time, you know, when you do the rear end after you're really a front end guy. Notice how when you come in the program, when you first come in the program, you're at the country fair, and you walk out, and you see dents on the front of the car that's parked there, and you say, he can use the program. You love it. The righteousness is beautiful. My God. Anyhow, I got to deliver. It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I ain't had a drink. I'm never drinking again. Thursday, I got to deliver this suit to this guy in Fairview. And, you know, it was cold, and I just had a light top coat on. And the window open, you know. You know how, remember, nice that was, keep the window open. And, ooh, that's good. That feels real good, you know. Yeah, I can see. Wonderful. I'm fine. So I get to the guy's house, and I got the suit in my hand, knock on the door. He opens the door, and I hand it to him, and I said, here's your suit. He says, well, come on in and have a drink. I says, I don't drink. He says, well, come on in and have one anyhow. I said, okay. Now, I took a nap there. I took a nap there because he said that I ate a great steak. And I didn't recall that. You don't recall much when you're taking a nap and eating steak. And I get back in my car, and I'm coming in 26th Street. And I'm going to turn at Zook Road. And I turn a little early at the Kmart. You know where that island is? And I put the car on the island. Now, this guy had given me a jug of Tanqueray before I left. There was a little gas station right there by the Kmart in those days. Little joint, sold gasoline for about 30 cents a gallon. So I started walking toward that. Problem was it was closed, but I had remembered the jug. I went back. I left the suit in the car because he said it didn't fit. Who the hell in that place could see? So anyhow, I got the jug. I got the windows were all open. The suit's hanging there. And I start walking down a street. And I got the jug in my pocket. And the Dorme Motel is there. So I'm going in there like I always did with the newspaper. You know, that's all I was going to get is something to read. So anyhow, I walked in there, and I'm walking around in the motel, and a blue and white car pulls up out there in the driveway, in the parking lot. So I went out, and I got in the car, and I said, the guy, take me home. Yeah, it was... classmate of Jerry's, Dick, what was his name? I can't remember. He's dead now. But anyhow, he took me home. And that was wonderful. Now, for some reason, I stopped prior to that at, what was that bar?
Eduardo's.
Because, see, I remembered I had some money. And I had to get rid of the money. And so I went into the bar, and a guy in the program was behind a plank. And so I'm buying drinks like a big shot and insulting everybody, you know. And so I called this guy. I said to the guy behind the plank, I gave him some money, and I said, where's the phone? He says, right there. I said, okay, get this guy on the phone. So he got him on the phone, and I said, hey, I'm thinking about joining your group. And he said to me, where are you? What do you mean, where am I? I still have money left. I ain't telling him where I am. He's going to come and get me. And I ain't done yet. You know, you got the money. And, you know, there were two people in there I hadn't insulted and a couple of other people I hadn't bought a drink for. So I had to get rid of that before I left. So anyhow, a little while later, I said the same thing to the guy behind the plank, get this guy on the phone. And I said, He comes on the phone. He says, listen, I had the cookies and the coffee out and everything waiting for you. Where are you? I said, listen, Todd, do you have a hat? And he says, yeah. I said, well, take a shit in it. Because I ain't going to come and join that group. Please don't take offense. I didn't mean it in a nasty way. But anyhow, I got home and ain't nobody talking to me, you know. Remember how you used to walk in a room and say, hey, anybody in here want to have sex? Nothing. Nothing. That was the way you kept them quiet. Nothing. Anyhow, now I'm for some reason I didn't go to work the next day. And I'm sitting in my kitchen in a t-shirt, and still, you know, like my wife made dinner and she served it to me very improperly. It was like, bam, you want that? Do you need a knife? I said, no knives. I don't need no knife. I don't need no knife. So anyhow, I'm sitting there. In comes Todd, smiling and laughing. He thinks this thing is funnier now. He says, my wife says to him, how are you doing, Todd? She said, fine. She said, I wouldn't go near him if I were you. So anyhow, he sat down and he said, what do you say we go to a meeting? And I said, hey, Todd, there ain't no way I'm getting out of the house tonight. She said, Todd, how long have you been sober? And he says, 4 years. She said, do not leave the house with that man. He's vile, and before you get to the corner, you will be drunk. You know what he said? I'll take my chance. He was real pleasant then, but when he got me in a car, he was not a different guy. He was a different guy, and he said, now, when we get there, I want you to shut up and listen. No, I was going to be the most important person there. Why wouldn't he let me talk? He said, and when you get tired of that, you sit there and shut up and listen. He said, yes, sir. You know, I'm genuflecting for the guy now. You know, mea culpa, mea culpa. Sits me down in a chair. In those days, your sponsor introduced you. You didn't even say nothing. And he got up and he told everybody that he brought this horse's ass with him tonight. And he told him my name. And we were all convinced. Well, then he came in, you know, and he got me next day. And then he said, I'll meet you here the next day. And then the next day he says, I'll meet you here on the next day. And then the next day. And the next day. What are you doing to me? You're going to get sober. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to tell you. I can't remember having an epiphany. But I liked it here. I liked it here. These were my people. And they were all sober. And they were laughing and having a good time. From that day on, that man never let go of me. Do you know what that means to me? It means my life. It means my life. Several of my children have never seen me drunk. Two of them have never seen me drunk. They had no idea. Some of them that did have offered them information. You know, yeah, let me tell you where the car used to be all the time. But anyhow, that's about the whole story. The whole story is that What you all want to do is hang around here as long as my sponsor has. All right? And you'll find out that every day gets better. You know, I can remember saying to myself, what do I do after I get sober? There's no challenge. There's no challenge then. Well, then I read the book again. And it says, go out and do what you can. And that's what we got to do. Because that's what makes you happy. What makes you happy is doing what you can for another drunk. Because that's what we were. We were drunks. And we got to help those people. Now, I'll tell you, there's this guy, and he's got twin boys, about 5 years old. And the one kid is a complete optimist, and the other is a total pessimist. And he's concerned about this. So he takes him to a psychiatrist. After about 6 months of working with the boys, the psychiatrist says to the guy, well, let's test these kids out. He said, okay. So he takes the kid that's a pessimist and he said, go over there in the Waldemar and ride the rides all day long. Have a good time. Kid says, no, he says, I get dizzy when I go on those and I get sick. So he takes him to the candy store and he says, go in a candy store and get whatever you want to eat. No, he says, that gives me an upset stomach and I don't think I want to do that. So he takes him to the bicycle store and he says to him, all right, get a bicycle or a skateboard or whatever it is you want. He says, oh, I'll fall down or hurt my elbow or whatever, skin my knees. I don't think I ought to do that. So the psychiatrist looks at the father and he says, well, let's try the other kid. And this kid's a total optimist. So they take him into this big room and it's got horseshit about this deep in there. And the kid is going nuts in there. He's rooting through this and going crazy. And the psychiatrist says, what are you doing, kid? He said, hey, with all this horse shit in here, there got to be a pony in here somewhere. Now you see, that is a completely appropriate story for us. Because all of us are looking for the pony. Because we know that's fun. And we can do that now. And I wish you all every good thing in your life because you deserve it. You deserve to have all the good things. You really do. God bless you all. Thank you.